Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tina, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Public Finance Results Conference Call for January 2009. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Miguel, you may begin your conference.
Thank you very much, operator. Good morning, everyone. This is Miguel Mesmacher, head of the Economic Planning Unit. With me is Gerardo Rodriguez, head of the Public Credit Unit. Welcome to the Mexican Ministries of Finance conference call on the Public Finance and Public Debt Report for January 2009. Let me remind our friends from the press that this call is off the record. First of all, let me clarify why we're having this conference call out of schedule. There are basically two reasons. The first has to do with how we're going to be reporting the public finance figures during the year, and the second has to do with the conversion of Pemex's Fidirega liabilities into direct public debt. I'll discuss the first, that is the adjustments that we're going to be making in our reporting of the public finance figures, together with a brief overview of the public finance results for January. Gerardo will then discuss the adjustment, the conversion process of Fidirega's liabilities into direct public sector debt, together with the public debt results for January. As for the first, that is the adjustment that we're going to be making in the way in which we're going to be reporting the figures, we're going to be basically making two adjustments all along the year as we report the monthly and quarterly results. The two adjustments are basically, we're going to be excluding Pemex's investment, we're going to be reporting figures as they come out, and then making two adjustments. One first adjustment is that we're going to be excluding Pemex's investment from the figures of the balance, and that's very important because we basically have two budget targets for the year. As you know, we're going to be having a deficit of about 1.8% of GDP in the approved budget, which is basically related with Pemex's investment during the year. Excluding Pemex's investment, the rest of the public finance figures have to be consistent with a balanced budget. So basically, we're going to be reporting figures as they come out, which should be consistent with a deficit of 1.8% of GDP, and we will also be reporting the figures excluding Pemex's investment, which should be consistent with a balanced budget for the year. The second adjustment is that we're going to be including revenues from the oil hedge, the corresponding revenues from the oil hedge for each period of the year. This is fairly important so you get a sense of how oil revenues are going to be evolving during the year once we incorporate the hedge, and also for how overall revenues are going to be evolving during the year. And this should give you a sense of whether we will need to use any of the resources from the oil stabilization funds to make up for any type of shortfall in revenues as the year progresses. With that, let me pass on to the main results in public finances for January. Basically, the public sector posted a $19 billion deficit. This figure is consistent with the approved public deficit that incorporates Pemex's investment during the year, and it's also consistent with a target of a balanced budget for 2009, excluding Pemex's physical investment. If Pemex's investment is included, and the share of expected revenues from the oil hedge at a current valuation corresponding to January is included, the public balance registered a surplus of 9.8 billion pesos in January. Budgetary revenues decreased 9.9% in real annual terms with respect to the same period of last year, due mainly to lower revenues from oil-related activities and non-oil tax revenues, which decreased 26% and 4.8% in real annual terms respectively. By adjusting oil revenues with the corresponding revenues from the oil hedge for January, a real decrease of 4.4% in budgetary revenues would be observed. Taking into account the revenue from the hedge, total revenues were consistent with the program for the month, implying that no resources from the stabilization funds are yet required. It is important to note that excess revenues from oil compensated non-oil revenues that were below program. Moving on to the detail of the evolution of the main components of budgetary revenues, non-oil tax revenues were 124.9 billion, 4.8% lower in real terms than those observed during January of the previous year. Income tax collection, which includes the unique rate corporate tax, increased 0.6% in real terms, while import VAT and excise tax collection posted decreases of 22.5%, 17.2%, and 14.2%, a reduction which was partially offset by the revenues from the collection of the tax on cash deposits of 4.1 billion pesos. Obviously, the three taxes that came, registered a reduction, and actually they came somewhat below program, are taxes that are related with consumption. In the particular case of the VAT, which is fairly important to explain, there are basically three factors which explain the relatively poor performance during the month. In first place, obviously, is the slowdown that we observed in consumption during the last quarter of the year. There is a second factor which has to do with a very important change in the seasonality of consumption that was observed in November and in December. As you can observe, for example, from ANTAD sales, there were very important discounts during the month of November, which probably implied that a lot of holiday sales that would have been taking place otherwise in December actually took place in November. So that's basically a seasonal adjustment that took place between November and December, with extremely high sales during November and then lower sales in December, which affected VAT revenues during January. The third and last factor is that Pemex actually paid much higher investment during December than was originally in the program, and therefore Pemex credited a very large amount in terms of VAT credits during the month of January. Obviously, the seasonal change in the pattern of sales from November to December, and then the very large credit applied by Pemex due to very large investment in December, are temporary factors that should not be repeated going forward during the remaining months of the year. In terms of oil-related revenues, they total 55.7 billion, an amount that is 26% lower in real terms than those registered in the same period of 2008. This result is explained by the lower price of Mexican oil exports by 59% and the decline in the oil production and export platforms of 7.3% and 11.3% respectively. This was partially offset by the exchange rate depreciation of 16% with respect to the same month of the previous year. In case the decline in oil revenues is offset by the revenues from the oil hedge corresponding to January of 13.8 billion, a decrease of 7.7% in real terms is recorded. As I mentioned previously, in terms of composition, oil revenues actually came up above program once the revenues from the hedge are incorporated, while non-oil tax revenues came slightly below program. Revenues of public entities under direct budgetary control other than Pemex totaled 35.8 billion, which represents an increase of 1.6% with respect to those registered in the same period of the previous year. And finally, non-tax, non-oil revenues were 8.9 billion, an amount that is 5.1% higher in real terms than that observed in the same period of the previous year. Moving on briefly to the side of expenditures, during the first month of the year, net budgetary expenditures of the public sector totaled 238.6 billion pesos, an amount that is 16.4% higher in real terms than the one observed in the same period of 2008. Paid programmable expenditures totaled 173.5 billion pesos, which is 16.7% higher in real terms than the one observed in the same period of the previous year. Federalized expenditures increased 3.3% in real terms, And then finally, the public sector's financial cost was 17.3 billion, an amount that is 8.5% lower in real terms compared with the one registered in the same month of last year. With that, we would finish with the public finance figures. So let me turn over the call to Gerardo Rodriguez.
Thank you, Miguel. Let me just make a quick comment on the results for January in terms of the public debt indicators, and then I'll spend some time explaining the details on how the changes in the Pidiregas scheme impacts the indicators that we have for public debt. At the end of January, the federal government's net domestic debt was 2,354 billion pesos, which is 21.8 billion pesos higher than the amount observed at the end of 2008. This is explained by a net indebtedness of 13.3 billion pesos and upward adjustments in inflation index debt of 4.3 billion pesos, and also a decrease in federal government's financial assets in the order of 4.2 billion pesos. In terms of external debt, the federal government's indicators at the end of January was $38.3 billion, an amount which is $600 million higher than the one observed at the end of 2008. This result is explained basically by a net amortization of $1.4 billion and also downward adjustments, accounting adjustments of $500 million, and also a decrease in financial assets in foreign currency in the order of $2.5 billion. The net domestic debt of the public sector as a whole at the end of January was 2,267 billion pesos, an amount which is 0.9 billion pesos lower than the stock of debt at the end of 2008, without, of course, considering the adjustment of the Pidiregas liabilities of Pemex. This is due to a net domestic borrowing of 17.3 billion pesos and also downward accounting adjustments by 10.6 billion pesos and an increase in public sector's financial assets of peso 7.6 billion. The federal government's, the public sector's, excuse me, net external debt stood also at $25.6 billion, an amount which is higher than that observed at the end of 2008 by $1.2 billion, which is explained by net external amortizations of $300 million that, again, does not include the conversion of the Pidiregas liabilities, and as well as downward accounting adjustments of $5.6 billion and a decrease in financial assets by $7.2 billion. Let me now turn over to the adjustments on the Pidiregas investment scheme. As you know, the Pidiregas scheme was created both for Pemex and CFE a number of years ago to increase the investment by the two companies, by the two state-owned companies, without impacting the traditional indicator of the budget deficit. As you know, the government accounting requires to register all spending on a current basis, regardless of whether that's related to investment. For corporations, as you know, the investment is registered over the years as a depreciation of amortization of assets, and that's how ultimate results are impacted. In the world of government accounting, that is different, and that was imposing constraints to increase the amount of investment by the two companies. The Pidiregas scheme was created, and since then, the CAPEX program of the two companies was able to be increased in a substantial way. Well, now, as Miguel mentioned, two changes were made to the fiscal responsibility law. First is the cancellation of the Pidiregas scheme of Pemex, which implies that all the investment executed by Pemex, and the debt related to finance those investment programs will be considered now as a budgetary item rather than as an off-balance or off-budget item as it was accounted for in the past. And second, the Pemex CAPEX, Pemex investment program would not be considered for the target zero deficit that the law contains. So what that implies basically for the public debt indicators is that the federal government, the public sector debt as a whole, will have a recognition of 898 billion pesos in direct public debt of Pemex, and an amortization of 336 billion pesos at the end of January using the financial assets of Pemex. In the Annex 2 of the press release that was published, there is a very clear indication of the implication that this adjustment has, in particular for the broadest definition of our public debt indicators, which is the historical balance of public sector borrowing requirements. This broadest indicator does not have an impact in terms of the total amount. The implication of this adjustment will only make some of the non-budgetary items become budgetary items, and that's in the order of six or seven points of GDP that you could see in the table in that particular annex, both in the domestic and the external component. The Pidiregas component, which was registered as a non-budgetary item, will become a budgetary item from now onward. So this adjustment, of course, has accounting implications, but from an economic and financial standpoint, the broadest definition of our public debt basically remains the same. With that, we conclude with the introductory remarks, and we can now proceed, operator, to the question and answer section. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first question will come from the line of Eduardo Torres.
Hi, good morning. Miguel and Gerardo, thanks for hosting this conference. I have two questions. First, if you could give us an update on the gross figures of the Oil Stabilization Fund. And second would be under the current circumstances, if you are planning any adjustments in terms of your growth projections or your budget deficit or the expenditure. And together with this, are you thinking of any that the federal transfers to the states will have to be adjusted somewhere along the year? Thank you.
Sure, Eduardo. Basically, the oil stabilization funds, that is the federal government oil stabilization fund, the fund of the federal entities, the fund of Pemex, and the fund for the restructuring of the pension system, total an amount close to 205 billion pesos. If you want, basically they're the numbers that we reported as part of the quarterly report for the closing of 2008. We make contributions to the fund after we have the numbers for each quarter of the year. So in that sense, there has not been an important change with respect to those numbers. In terms of the detail, the resources in the Oil Stabilization Fund for the federal government are close to 86 billion pesos. Those in the Oil Stabilization Fund of the states and of Pemex are close to 30 billion pesos each. And we have resources in the fund for the restructuring of the pension system of close to 64 billion pesos. Now, obviously, as you know, our growth projection, we have already revised them downwards with respect to what we originally had in the budget, with Minister Carstens mentioning a number with a reduction of close to minus 1%. Obviously, during the rest of the year, there could be additional revisions but we have not yet made public a new number for the revisions. Now, our expectations are that the resources that we have both from the hedge and the oil stabilization funds would be allowing us to maintain the same level of expenditures without having a larger deficit. That is, we'll be using revenues from the oil stabilization funds to make up for any additional shortfalls in non-oil revenues, and that would allow us to maintain the level of expenditures that was approved in the budget without having a larger deficit than the one that was originally approved in the budget. Obviously, as you were mentioning, lower revenues also imply that the shared revenues that will be going to states and municipalities will also be adjusted downwards. And that is where the oil stabilization fund of the federal entities comes in, which, as I mentioned, has $30 billion. Our expectation is that these resources would also be sufficient for them to make up for any reduction that we observe in terms of shared revenues during this year.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Our next question will come from the line of Daniel Volberg with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, thank you for having the call. I have two quick questions. In your analysis of the current and capital accounts, I have two questions. One is on the net exports line. You know, what are sort of the assumptions driving the $3.7 billion net exports surplus that you project for this year? And on the financial account, what is driving the net foreign investment of $6.9 billion deficit that you project? If you could sort of shed a little bit of light on those, that would be very helpful. Thanks.
Daniel, in terms of our general projections for the current and capital accounts, obviously we're revising them sort of in real time. Now, obviously there are two important things. Basically, all the assumptions underlying whatever projections we have for the current account, and in particular the trade balance, we basically have two very important relationships underlying all of our projections in terms of the trade balance. From the point of view of non-oil exports, something that is fairly important there, let's say we're assuming that they are going to be mostly driven during 2009 by the evolution of external demand, with a limited effect from the point of view of the real exchange rate depreciation. So in that sense, our estimations of the evolution of net exports are somewhat conservative in that we're not assuming that we would be gaining any market share associated with a depreciation of the real exchange rate, and some of that could be taking place along the year. Now, from the point of view of the overall balance, the assumption that is probably most important is the very tight link that we have historically observed between the evolution of non-oil exports and imports of intermediate goods, which, as you know, represent close to 75% of overall imports. And the relationship there that we have seen historically is basically one for one. In addition to that, what we have observed also is that consumption imports and capital imports do tend to be much more responsive to changes in the real exchange rate, particularly consumption imports. So that basically, I think, explains that basically explains sort of the underlying, without going into too much detail, which if you want we can discuss later, this is the overall picture and this is the overall explanation for the evolution of the current account that we have. Now, in terms of the numbers for foreign investment that you're referring to, those numbers basically mix all type of foreign investment. It's not only foreign direct investment, but it's also investment from foreigners into the money markets and the stock markets. Basically, what we have in those assumptions is a slight reduction in foreign direct investment, and then basically we're assuming that no inflows would take place from the private sector into equity markets or into money markets during 2009.
Thank you. And just to, sorry, just to follow up, the private sector amortization that you have, you know, the shortfall you have as a $7.5 billion shortfall. What sort of assumptions do you make for that?
At that point in time, the assumptions were quite conservative. We were basically assuming that companies were able to refinance only one third of the amortizations that they had during 2009. Obviously, as the year has progressed, it's become clear by observing the refinancing that has been taking place and also by looking at the type of companies that would need to refinance, that assumption has, it's become clear to us that that assumption turned out to be very conservative. So probably we'll be revising those numbers to show a lower reduction in terms of the amount of flows going to the private sector during 2009. Gerardo would like to elaborate.
Let me just complement on that situation of a private sector external debt. The numbers that we have is that the private sector as a whole will have market debt amortizations in the order of $2.1 billion. For the numbers that we have used in some PowerPoint presentations, we're basically assuming that all of those $2.1 billion are not refinanced with external sources of funding. Now, turning to the stock of, the amortizations of bank debt of the private sector as a whole, that number is around $9.5 to $10 billion. Dollars coming due, and most of that is very concentrated in a few companies, especially as you know, the case of Cemex, no, which has bank amortizations in the order of $7 billion for this year. So the assumption, the original assumption, was that of the overall stock of maturities of bank debt for the private sector, only one third, as Miguel mentioned, only one third would be refinanced with external sources. Now, the information we have right now, for example, Cemex being able to advance their refinancing strategy, already has rolled over $4 billion of the $7 billion that they have coming due. Will make us to adjust those numbers. But in general, I think the message in terms of the structure of the external accounts is that having the public and the private sector with a relatively light amortization schedule externally, and having also the public sector being able to get money from both the IDB and the World Bank, and also on the current account side, as Miguel mentioned, having a somewhat self-adjusting mechanism in the non-oil trade balance, the external accounts look in a relatively healthy position for 2009 as a whole. Thank you.
Our next question will come from the line of Tom Smith with MetLife.
Hi, thanks, Miguel. Just quickly, if you could... When you answered the first question about the oil stabilization fund, I didn't get all the information. Could you just mention, you mentioned a $200 billion number, 200 billion pesos, and then 86 billion, and then 30, 30, and 64. And if you could just quickly go through that, then I have another question I'd like to ask.
Okay, sure. So basically, I mean, those are the overall numbers. The 86 billion pesos are resources that the federal government has to make up for shortfalls in public sector revenues. Then the $30 billion in Pemex's oil stabilization funds are resources that they have, which they can either use for investment during this year, or they can use to make up for shortfalls in their own revenues. The $30 billion are resources that the federal states can use for to make up for a shortfall in basically shareable revenues, shared revenues during 2009. And finally, the $64 billion in the fund for the restructuring of pensions are actually resources that we could potentially use during the year to actually cover some expenditures from the point of view of pensions during the year. And that could potentially open up space to reallocate the resources that were originally assigned in the budget for these purposes to different types of activities.
Okay, thank you. That's much more clear. The other question I have is, please confirm that the proceeds of the oil hedge will be received only in the fourth quarter of 2009, maybe December, I believe. And if that is the case, do you foresee any cash flow problems between now and then, or will you just use these funds to to meet whatever cash flow needs you may have?
Yes. As you all know, the oil hedge was designed in a way that actually matches in a perfect way the exposure that public finances have with respect to changes in oil prices. So basically what we're exposed to during the year is to the average price of oil during the year. Because of that, the type of hedge that was executed was again, based on the average price of oil for the year, and it would be settled in the first few days of December. And as it has been mentioned, the exercised amount of the hedge would be a net inflow in the capital account of the balance of payments. Now, during the year, what's going to happen is that since our cash balances typically experience some sort of seasonality because most of the spending is, well, not most of the spending, but there is an important proportion of the spending that goes towards the fourth quarter of the year. But also, the way we calendar our maturities, especially for domestic debt, is that we rely more heavily towards December for the maturity, so that we have only a couple of maturities of the different instruments during the year. So our cash balances tend to rise towards the middle of the year, and they remain relatively high, and they come down in particular in December, but in general in the fourth quarter of the year. So we're not foreseeing any sort of cash management pressure in that regard.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then the number one. Our next question will come from the line of Alfredo Thorne with JP Morgan Mexico.
Hello, Miguel. Hello, Gerardo. I have two questions. One is in the balance of payments report that came out a few weeks ago. There is a very strong inflow on the asset side, and I think where the balance of payments put is assets in foreign banks, and the inflow is $8.1 billion, and this is very atypical from the previous quarters. Can you explain us what is that due to? And the second question is, Gerardo, if you can tell us what is the gross rollover of the domestic debt, in other words, not only the net, but what you have to amortize on an annual basis on the debt, and how much you are expected to fund in the local market.
Yes, Alfredo. Basically, there is something fairly important here in terms of the asset side and in terms of how Banco de Mexico and INEGI report the asset side in terms of the balance of payments. There is one first item which has to do with the fact that if you actually were to take without the asset side the change in liabilities in the balance of payments, it would not correspond to net reserves. It would correspond to gross reserves. Let's say if you were to take all the asset side and in the asset side only consider the part of foreign FDI, that is FDI of Mexicans going outside, it would not correspond to net reserves, it would correspond to gross reserves. So actually Banco de Mexico incorporates into the asset side of the balance of payments, let's say, an adjustment variable that makes it consistent with the evolution of net reserves in Banco de Mexico's accounts. So basically there is one important element of adjustment there which has to do with the difference between gross reserves and net reserves. And with that difference basically being the liabilities of Banco de Mexico with a maturity of less than 6 months. That explains that for a very large part, this strange result that you're observing in the fourth quarter of 2008.
With regards to the gross financing needs of the federal government, I would refer you, Alfredo, to the annual borrowing program that we published back in December of last year. Every year in that document, we publish a very detailed table which has all the amortizations and the net financing needs for the year as a whole. For 2009, our gross financing needs are in the order of 8 points of GDP, which is slightly higher than the number that we've observed over the past 2 or 3 years. Of these 8 points of GDP, almost two-thirds represents debt amortizations, both external and locally. In terms of the local local maturities, local debt maturities of the say of the 8 points of GDP, 62.7% represents amortizations of all domestic debt, both market debt and the liabilities associated with the implementation of the Easter reform. And external debt, if we consider both the multilateral debt and market debt amortization, it only represents 4.6% of our gross financing needs, equivalent to 0.4% of GDP. So again, in terms of the structure of our debt maturities, it is mostly related to the local market. From the external side, as you know, our financing needs are relatively limited. Thank you.
Well, if I can ask, what are you telling is that these $8 billion increase in assets are assets held by Banxico in foreign banks?
No, basically what happens, Alfredo, is, for example, you can have a certain inflow of dollars, and this is sort of the adjustment that Banco de Mexico typically makes. Domestic commercial banks, for example, may have done operations in domestic financial markets and with that accumulated assets in dollars, for example. Then those assets in dollars are deposited in the central bank at Banco de Mexico. In turn, Banco de Mexico can use or will use those resources and investment in T-bills, for example. So basically what happens here is that Banco de Mexico discounts these deposits that, for example, commercial banks make with Banco de Mexico from their gross reserves to obtain the net reserves. All of the deposits that the banks make in Banco de Mexico go into the gross reserves, but then they discount these liabilities when they calculate the net reserves.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question will come from the line of Gary Newman with Morgan Stanley.
Good morning, gentlemen. Gary couldn't make it this morning, but I've got two questions related to reserves. The first is, the any potential sale of the stake that Citibank has in Banamex, how do you see what the impact of that could be on FX demand? There's talk that the local subsidiary may be fully hedged, maybe in excess of actually a potential sale amount. How do you think about that? What the impact on a demand for the currency or any kind of facility from the authorities? And the second question is that there's been talk out of Washington about some kind of broader support available from the IMF for some countries. And I'm just trying to understand, in the case of Mexico, given the oil hedge this year, given your comments on the balance of payments, and looking into 2010 as well, it seems that those are not areas where there would be any need for financing. And so just trying to understand, if Mexico were to consider an IMF program, what would be the rationale behind it? Or maybe I'm missing an area. Perhaps it's reserve accumulation that the authorities would target for such a program. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. In terms of, potential extraordinary demand for dollars generated by a transaction similar as the one you mentioned or any other, it is something that, of course, would require a special attention by the Exchange Rate Commission. That type of extraordinary demand was actually the one that triggered the different set of interventions back in October and since then, just because there was a situation in which real demand for dollars was there on the table. So the Exchange Rate Commission, of course, would have the responsibility of looking at that particular situation and facilitate, an orderly operation of the FX market and facilitate actually the market to process this extraordinary demand. So that's something that's a dynamics that the Exchange Rate Commission has been already involved in and would certainly look at any additional potential transaction in the future. In terms of additional support by multilaterals, as you know, what we have stated starting, say, a few months ago, is that we were ramping up substantially our programs, both with the IDB and with the World Bank, just because this situation in which the credit markets are experiencing substantial pressure, it is when these institutions need to prove their worth, and it is when their financing, because of how it is structured, becomes very attractive to middle-income countries like Mexico. We've already engaged in discussions with the World Bank and with the IDB to have $8 billion financing in total for the public sector, of which we would expect to use at the level of the federal government $5 billion of those. But not only that, I mean, we've engaged in a discussion with Washington in terms of strengthening these institutions so that they can actually increase the type of support that they provide to middle-income countries in the current market in the current market environment. So that's an ongoing discussion. This is a very special situation that requires very special action, extraordinary action from these type of institutions. The IMF also has been showing some very good signs in terms of making more flexible the products that they offer. There's still some way to go in that discussion, but ideally, I mean, these institutions should be able to strengthen their lending possibilities in the current market environment so that middle-income countries, Mexico and others, can rely more on their financing in order to transit in an orderly way in this difficult environment. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have no further questions at this time.
Could you ask one last time, operator, if there are any additional questions, please?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And we do have a question from Luis Arcentalos.
Hey, Miguel, a quick question just following up on what Tom Smith asked. You are spending, assuming a level of oil of 70, at least that's how your budget is structured, but the inflow only comes in December. Is that the case, or will you be withholding some of the transfers to the states to make ends meet until you get the large inflow at the end of the year?
Luis, there are two things here. The hedge covers the revenues of the federal government. It does not cover the resources from the states. Obviously, if there is a reduction in revenues that impacts shared revenues that would be allocated to the states, they will be having to make up for that with their own stabilization fund. Now, the resource that we give to the states is established by law and is automatic. We have absolutely no discretion where we can modify the amount that we decide to transfer to the states from shared revenues. So in that sense, there is no type of adjustment that we could decide to make on that side. If at all, fluctuations in shared revenues will depend on the evolution of shareable revenue collections during the year, and then the states will have to decide on the timing of when they want to start using the resources, if at all, from the ROI Stabilization Fund. As regarding the flows, from the point of view of the federal government, what Gerardo was mentioning is fairly important. Even though we have actually accelerated the pattern of expenditures during the year, typically what we observe, and we still continue to expect to see something like that during this year, is an increase in financial assets that the government has, financial cash, let's say, that the government has during the first half of the year, in spite of sort of the accelerated expenditure calendar that we have during this year. And this is a pattern that we observe every single year, where revenues are, particularly non-oil tax revenues, are tilted to the first half of the year, and expenditures, in spite of the acceleration, still continue to be tilted towards the second half of the year. Obviously, this generates a pattern that we observe every year, and we continue to expect this to be the case, where we actually observe accumulation of financial assets as the year progresses, which is sort of the comment that Gerardo had made earlier. I don't know if Gerardo would like to add anything. That's okay.
Yeah, it's perfect. Thank you.
And we have a follow-up question from Alfredo Thorne.
Gerardo, one question. Referring to the IMF, what is the status of the credit line that you are negotiating? Is that something that will be announced soon?
Well, it is not that we ourselves are negotiating a specific type of support with the fund. As you know, what the fund put out is a pre-approved short-term liquidity facility for countries that have a strong economic policy in place, such as Mexico. What we have done since then is to provide them with specific comments in terms of the design of a product so that they can improve that. And actually what we have heard is that the type of comments that we have offered them are a generalized type of comments from different countries. So what the IMF is doing right now is just evaluating all these comments, trying to come up with additional ideas to improve the design of that particular product. And I mean, we, as many other countries, are discussing with them in different ways in which they can have a better product in place. There is nothing specifically, say, on a bilateral basis between Mexico and the IMF. It is just a multilateral discussion of these strong emerging market countries with the IMF.
Okay, thank you.
We have no further questions, sir.
Well, thank you very much. With this, we finish the conference call. Please feel free, as usual, to contact us with any additional questions and any follow-up remarks through the investor's office. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. You may all disconnect.